Welcome back, everybody. This is Frank Riccio. I'm an attorney practicing in Braintree, Massachusetts, and I'm a trial attorney. With me is Dominic Paolini, who's also a trial attorney and is also a physician. When we left off, we were talking a little bit about the medicine, and I'm just going to stick to that topic for maybe another couple of minutes. And could you just tell us in general terms, sort of like cardiology 101, what is the cardiovascular system?
Frank, the cardiovascular system is the part of the body that supplies blood to the internal organs, such as the brain, the kidneys, the bowel, and a woman, the uterus, the ovaries. The main component of the cardiovascular system is the heart. And the heart really has two separate sections, the left heart and the right heart. The left heart consists of a pumping chamber that pumps blood, the red blood or the oxygenated blood, to the brain and the other organs. The right side of the heart is the part of the heart that pumps the blue blood or the venous blood to the lungs. Now, once the blue blood gets into the lungs, it picks up oxygen and turns red again. That red blood returns to the left side of the heart, where the left ventricle actually pumps it to the body.
Now, you and I actually have worked together on a number of malpractice cases, and not only do you do cardiac cases, you also do other types of medical malpractice cases, but I'm going to restrict you to just the cardiovascular cases.
Okay.
What are your typical scenarios in cardiovascular medical malpractice cases? What's a typical fact pattern, if you will?
Okay. The typical fact pattern is a patient who has chest pain or shortness of breath, or both, and goes to an emergency room or a primary care physician and basically says, I have chest pain. Now, once the patient is there, the doctor starts their evaluation. And a little while ago, we talked about the history. Unfortunately, because of the changes in the healthcare system and the numbers of doctors and the changes in reimbursement, there isn't much time to take a history from a patient. Doctors are seeing patients now sometimes every 7 minutes, two patients every 15 minutes, eight patients an hour. So there's not that time to elicit or to draw the history out of the patient. And as a result, doctors are sometimes relying on very quick medical tests. And sometimes this quickness to go to tests is encouraged by the patient themselves, where the patient feels that, well, if the doctor does a test, we're going to get to the diagnosis. However, the history and the physical exam is really, really very important to the diagnosis. Now, once a patient comes in with chest pain, the usual steps is to do the history, do the physical exam, and order the appropriate tests. If the doctor follows the American Heart Association guidelines, he or she will be able to pick up 95% of patients that have what we call an acute coronary syndrome. And an acute coronary syndrome, again, is a syndrome where a patient is about to have a heart attack or is already having a heart attack. The goal of treating an acute coronary syndrome is to prevent an impending heart attack or to limit the damage of an already ongoing heart attack.
And how do you do that? How do you prevent an impending heart attack?
Okay. Once a diagnosis of an acute coronary syndrome is made and the enzymes that we talked about earlier, the troponin, come back as negative, this is something called pre-infarction angina. Infarction means death of the heart muscles, and the word angina means that the heart is not getting enough blood. Usually this will mean, if somebody has pre-infarction angina, this will mean a trip to the cardiac catheterization lab where dye is squirted into the arteries of the heart to show and demonstrate any blockages. If blockages are found, they could be treated with a balloon, which will expand the blockages, or something called a stent, which is a little wire cage that actually keeps the artery open so that blood can flow to the heart. Even though the heart pumps the blood, the heart itself needs blood to carry the oxygen and the fuel that it needs to do this pumping action.
Now, I recall a case that I handled several years ago where, again, history was extremely important. Even though the patient was 22 years old, he had all the signs of an impending heart attack, and ultimately he ended up going into cardiac arrest and he had a massive MI. Are young people immune from heart attacks?
No, that's a very important point, Frank. And what you had mentioned, an MI, that's an abbreviation for something called myocardial infarction. Myo means muscle, cardiac means of the heart. So the muscle of the heart infarcts. And again, an infarction is that the heart muscle actually dies and becomes permanently damaged. Now, myocardial infarctions can be seen, or heart attacks, can be seen in high school athletes. They could be seen in 20-year-olds who have a sedentary lifestyle. So age itself is not a protector against a heart attack. And again, this is where the history is very important, because patients who have heart attacks at an early age usually runs in the family. So it's important for the doctor to inquire about other family members who may have had heart problems when a teenager or a 20-year-old present with chest pain.
Now, another type of cardiovascular case that I see, none of these are super frequent, but, you know, they're out there, and that is the failure to diagnose a pulmonary embolism. What's that all about?
Okay. What's that all about is that chest pain could be caused by what we've been talking about, angina or a heart attack, but it can be caused by other things. One of the things is a blood clot to the lungs, and that's called a pulmonary embolism. Now, pulmonary emboli are clots that usually start in the legs. Could be the lower legs or the upper legs. And people who have certain risk factors are prone to these clots. The risk factors are, of course, smoking, obesity, a sedentary lifestyle, a long trip on an airplane or in a car, or patients that have what are called hypercoagulable conditions, where their blood clots spontaneously. And what happens is that these clots develop in the leg, sometimes over days, weeks, or even months. And then what happens is the blood clots travel up the veins of the legs into what's called the vena cava, which is the large vein in the abdomen, enter the right side of the heart, and the right ventricle pumps the clot into the lungs. Once the clot is pumped into the lungs, it will clog the flow of blood into the lung. And when the flow of blood into the lung is restricted, the patient gets chest pain, shortness of breath, they can actually turn blue. And again, we're faced with a condition that doesn't have a specific simple test. In the old days, there were some tests like blood gases, something called ventilation perfusion scans. But right now, the gold standard test for a pulmonary embolism or a blood clot would be a CT scan, which is very easily done in most hospitals.
Now, we have to take a break. When we come back, what we're going to talk about, again, is some of the legal ramifications of all of this. This is Talking About the Law. My name is Frank Riccio, and we'll see you in a couple of minutes. Thank you now.